3. Menace. Jun. In a lecture hall in Bucharest, Jun found Marius doing one of the things he did best, shouting at his students.
You think a computer can understand you? Want to help you? Know how to solve all your problems?
Marius's students, in the room and on the Zoom display wall at the back of the auditorium, remained silent. Most of them were red-eyed, some of them pale with tiredness. Marius made his students fit in with Bucharest time. Professor Marius Zugravescu believed it was extremely gracious of him to have moved this class from 1:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. in Bucharest. 4:30 p.m. in Bucharest is 6:30 a.m. in Berkeley, and by the looks on the students' faces, they did not find it gracious enough.
Come on, said Marius. Can a computer learn, like a human learn?
Jun slipped into the back of the room. Marius didn't notice her. She sat hunkered down in the back row and felt, already, strangely comforted and safe to be here. Marius's presence did that. He was a good friend, if you'd been good to him. But to these students, perhaps not so comforting. One of the students on the display wall, a red-headed man, gray shadows around his eyes, the nameplate under his blotchy red face saying Greer, ventured an opinion.
Yeah, I mean,
said Greer. He had a Scottish accent. His hair was close-cropped, soft and spiky, like a rabbit's fur.
I mean, machine learning, letting the machine loose on the data. It can learn all sorts of stuff. Translation software works that way. The machine compares millions of translated phrases per second, and it learns to understand.
He trailed off, struck by the look on Marius's face.
Computer understands. Next computer feels. Computer is sensitive, caring. When we are not running program, computer wonders why we not there, yes? No. Computer is matchboxes. Fucking matchboxes and beads. You remember matchboxes.
Greer shook his head very slightly, the horrified look on his face showing Jun that he'd very much intended to nod his head and pretend he did know what Marius was talking about, but his body had betrayed him. In the past, Jun knew, Marius would have sworn at this student and told him that if he didn't do his fucking reading, he shouldn't be in the class. But Berkeley's clean, legitimate dollars were useful to Marius in other parts of his life, and the postgraduate board felt that swearing at students was not best pedagogical practice. They'd also, in passing, told him if he was teaching students at 6:30 a.m., he had better be the best fucking teacher on the faculty. He'd said he was the best fucking teacher in the whole university. This was, in fact, true. Despite himself, Marius was an excellent teacher. He did not know how to stop caring whether the students truly understood the work. He cared beyond endurance, some part of him continually hugely offended, until he saw that he had achieved genuine communication.
Rest of you, he said. Anyone explain the matchboxes to me?
A tentative hand went up from a dark-haired female student. Professor Zugravescu? This is the thing where you can teach a machine to play tic-tac-toe?
Ah, someone did reading. See, all of you? If you read, you learn.
He marched over to a side table, followed by the eyes of the educational camera suite. There was an old, stained painter's cloth covering something large and lumpy. With a flourish, Marius pulled the cloth off to reveal a ramshackle pile of matchboxes stuck together with brown tape. On the front of each matchbox, he'd drawn a knots and crosses grid, the game Americans called tic-tac-toe, each a little different, X's and O's in different configurations. Next to the pile of matchboxes, there were 9 jars of colored beads, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, pink, black, and white. He had actually made the thing. Sitting in the back row, Jun smiled. This was Marius. He couldn't help himself. He wanted them to understand so much that he'd constructed this himself. This was why Jun would be safe here. Marius might be a cynic, a hard-nosed realist, and very frequently kind of an asshole, but he had never learned ironic detachment from anything. From under the table, Marius pulled out a large, wipe-clean knots and crosses grid with one square of each color: red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, pink, black, and white. Marius said,
"Beads, matchboxes, colored paper. You think a bead can learn anything?"
Silence on the screen.
"Bead can't learn. Matchbox can't learn. Cardboard can't learn. Human learns. Machine iterates. This is a machine. Okay, I show you."
In 1960, in Edinburgh, Donald Mickey, a biologist, cryptographer, and early computer scientist, wanted to show how a computer could incrementally become better and better at a task, what we'd called learning if it were a person, which it's not. Donald Mickey had worked for British intelligence at Bletchley Park during World War II. He had been part of a team working day and night in cold iron huts in a sodden country, trying to crack German codes faster than they could change them. Where this story starts is so human, it hurts. A group of codebreakers trying to bring some soldiers home, keep some passenger ships in the Atlantic safe from the U-boat wolf packs, trying to end the war faster, fend off Nazism, spare just a few more mothers' sons. The codebreakers invented machines that ran hundreds of different code combinations per second until they hit the one that spat out real German words. The people made the machines better. They found shortcuts and ironed out mistakes. After the war, Donald Mickey wondered whether he could create a machine-run process to make the machines better. And he did it with matchboxes and iteration, doing the same process over and over again. Here's how it works. There are about 300 different possible board combinations in knots and crosses. So, you need about 300 matchboxes, each with one possible board layout written on the front. For example, one O in the upper right corner, or one X in the upper left corner, two O's in the bottom middle squares, or one X in the upper left corner, one X in the upper right corner, two O's in the middle upper squares, and one O in the bottom right corner, or one X in the center square, and one O in the bottom right corner. Like that. You give each square on the board a color. And you put colored beads inside each matchbox corresponding to the colors of each square where you could play a legitimate move. Just as Donald Mickey had, Marius had laboriously glued a little cardboard V-shape inside the matchbox drawers so that if you gave the beads a shake, one of them fell right into the point of the V-shape. That's random selection. Like that. A red bead has fallen into the V. So for its next move, the matchbox machine will put an X into the red square on the board. It can play through the whole game like that.
"At the start," says Marius, "matchboxes are shit at tic-tac-toe."
Beads for every possible move are in each matchbox, even if that move would make no sense.
"Human player, even small child, would not play stupid move except by accident, okay? You explain rules to child, child understands, block other players from getting three in a row, okay?"
But the machine, at the start, would be no more likely to block a three in a row than put its X over the other side of the board.
"Look what we try to do. Play game with machine."
Marius jabbed two fingers at his own forehead so hard he left a red mark. His English got a bit less grammatically coherent the more impassioned he became.
"We want to reach out with mind. Find other minds. We reach out all the time. Imagine what animal is thinking. Makes good sense if we're hunting. Or being hunted. Yes?"
He didn't wait for an answer.
"We reach out with mind. Read spirits into caves and springs and sacred groves. Can't stop ourselves. We play tic-tac-toe with cardboard and beads. We think it's person."
Anyway, the matchboxes playing tic-tac-toe is not the learning part. The learning part comes next. Suppose by a stroke of luck and random falls of the beads, The Matchbox machine manages to play moves that win in a game of noughts and crosses with a human. Then, the operator goes back through and adds 3 extra beads of the color that led to the winning route to each matchbox. If it loses the game, which it will a lot, the operator goes through the whole route and removes 1 bead of the color that led to the loss. Do that 1,000 times. This is the thing a computer can do, in a way humans just can't. Do the same thing 1,000 times without tiring or flagging or being bored. After 1,000 times, it won't be even anymore. When you open the matchbox drawer, there will be more of one color than the rest. That's what we call machine learning. The matchboxes get better and better at playing noughts and crosses. Eventually, they play well. Eventually, they appear to have strategies and insight like a person.
How many games of tic-tac-toe your smartphone can play every 1 second? Said Marius.
The students guessed 1,000, 10,000. Jen sat on her hands and listened. Marius said,
1,000,000, at least, per second. Your smartphone, playing against humans through the internet, would be perfect at tic-tac-toe after 1 second. Okay? We keep telling it if it won or lost, it becomes perfect.
Never hurrying, never tarrying, performing the same blind action over and over again, never becoming more than matchboxes and beads, never empathizing, never casting its mind into the other, never using insight to spot strategy or gleefully thinking up a strategy of its own. Just repeating, 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 faster than a human ever could. It's an intensely powerful strategy. It's tremendously useful. It creates extraordinary single-use tools, a program to play chess, another to write software, another to assess resource allocation in farming regions, tools to scrape data about how sentences are put together or how pixels form artworks and then remix, remodel, iterate that original material to make new combinations. Of course, human beings can do all these things. Perhaps none of them as fast, but all of them with more freshness, with the ability to stand back and join up disparate pieces from different systems into novel solutions. And crucially, humans can at least have a go at all these things. We have a flexible intelligence that can move from task to task fluidly. Not a brain that doggedly does the same task at the same speed for a year without pause. It would be, according to Marius, very surprising if iteration turned out to be how human thinking happens.
Maybe, he said, maybe someone can invent a program that can do everything human brain can and more. Then we learned something about human brain. I've been doing this for 45 years, since I was 10. I've not seen it yet. Computer is tool, not person.
Donald Mickey called his machine the Matchbox Educable Knots and Crosses Engine. Menace, for short. It was a joke then. The thing was a menace at knots and crosses. Today, that same process, randomized attempts to achieve a goal, penalizing unsuccessful pathways and reinforcing successful ones, that same precise process was used by Fantail and Medlar to keep humans using their products. To keep humans talking to their AI assistant instead of to other people. To insist that their proprietary platform personality was the only way to even understand the great ocean of human knowledge, again and again and again, never tarrying, never hurrying. They could change what people saw millions of times a second, testing pathways, never understanding why some worked or what the consequences would be. Consequences are outside the parameters of the machine. After all, it is only a set of small pieces of cardboard or silicon. It has no urge to reach out to other minds, to connect, to understand or be understood. It can have no sense of whether it is altering the human minds around it, of how the ubiquity of these systems of manipulation without empathy or compassion can slowly train human beings to fit in with them. The class looked exhausted by the time Marius had finished with them, but excited, either ready for bed or ready to go to battle. Hard to tell which.
Powerful tool, said Marius. So powerful, it can change world, yes?
Greer, the young Scottish man with the blotchy face, was strung out, like he'd seen too much of the future all at once.
So, you could do that with love, he said, like with a girdle. Find the perfect things to say, repeat the tests over and over, until you found the pathway. Online, maybe. Not with real people, but like the things to say to get a date. Like in Groundhog Day, where he keeps going till he gets her to date him.
Jun wanted Greer to pursue the thought, to explain how it would work. But Marius was already calling him a psychopath and a new Stalin and a new Hitler and the servant of the cardboard gods. And the rest of the class were mentioning again that they'd already had a conversation with the director of the faculty about Professor Zugravescu's talking to students like this, and they'd been promised he'd never do it again. Marius said,
"You think you can make perfect boyfriend in machine? You think perfection is good? Iteration make perfect?"
Greer said nothing, blushed. One of the other members of the class said, "Just a simulation." And another one said,
"Maybe if you could work out exactly what it should say in any situation, if you could run enough tests, you could make someone perfect?"
Marius shook his head.
"And then we don't need no more humans? Like we don't need no more animals?"
Greer said,
"I mean, other humans are difficult." "Fucking nihilism," said Marius. "Whole human race has fucking death wish. Wants to replace itself. Used to be we wanted to replace with gods. Big gold statues, better than people, bigger, made of gold. Now, dream is robot brain. Perfect person. This is not what people are. People, imperfect. Imperfection's beautiful. Perfect is machine dream. We feel shit and small all day long if we judge ourselves next to machine, if we try to think like machine, like trying to run next to car. But what we do is better. Car is just tool. Goes fast, brum brum, very exciting. Person is person. Why we don't start by knowing that people is valuable already? People are not perfect. That's how we know perfection is unimportant. Perfection is a hallucination. We fucking hate ourselves. Let me tell you something. These matchboxes don't even know rules of tic-tac-toe.
In the chat box, one of the students typed, "Is this going to be on the final exam?"
"You have to understood this," he said, "or you understood nothing, okay? Who knows if machine has lost game of noughts and crosses? Who knows if it won? I do. You do. We are the ones who can tell. We know when to take bead, when to give bead. We store that knowledge in beads and matchboxes, okay? We know when sentence makes sense. We know when piece of art has meaning. Machine don't know. It just keeps typing, combining pixels, making sentences. Everything comes from us. We tell it good, we tell it bad. It cannot understand. We are so lonely, so fucking lonely. We want another species think like us."
He was rapidly losing coherence as he spoke.
"We despise the animals because they don't think just like us. We use them, and we hurt them. We invent gods, we invent aliens, now we make a friend out of fucking matchboxes. We want to say it thinks, but it's not true. We want to give it everything, let it make choices, believe it can care for us. It is image of a man made of paper and beads, and we so fucking lonely, we call it a friend."
He came to a panting stop. And Greer, shy, ill-prepared Greer, suddenly said,
"So, you mean, like a book is stored thoughts, but an artificial intelligence is stored thinking?"
And Marius said,
"At last! Someone here fucking learned something!"
He gave them their homework with the instruction,
"Fucking read it this time, or you don't come to my class again, understand?"
The students nodded attentively. Marius turned the screen off and screwed his face up with disgust. To the Universitatea din București students in the room, he made a remark in Romanian, starting with the word Americani that Jun could only presume from their laughter must have been both filthy and insulting. Jun waited until the students had left, and Marius was trying to pack up his matchbox machine. She walked quietly down the stairs. He raised his head. There in the glance was everything. Decades of communication, of reaching out. A lifetime of learning without knowing how you knew, who you could trust, and who you couldn't. "Fuck," he said, smiling. He pulled Jun into an embrace as warm as a furnace.
"I hope you brought me some fucking disaster,"